Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proud to use Audio-Technica headphones for our show. Audio-Technica has a great rebate going on till the end of the year before Christmas, where you can actually purchase a select series of 40 series microphones, and you can get a free M50 studio headphones. So make sure to check out their website, www.audio-technica.com, for more information. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Jeez, my grease. What's going on, Jeff?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oops, my mic's off. There we go. We're off to a good start.
Yeah, it's a wow.
But anyway, no, I'm doing really good. I had a really great week this week because I was doing a lot of doing research for tonight's guest, and it just brought back a lot of memories. The guitar playing of our guest tonight, Steve, is just amazing and inspiring. And I just want to let everybody know it's because of one of his songs, which we're going to play in a minute. I built that double cutaway Les Paul with the P90s because I wanted to get that sound, and so it's kind of cool.
Well, very cool. Well, I mean, speaking of fantastic guitar players, I actually had a crazy event happen to me. So I went on vacation with my wife to Austin, Texas, Music City, capital of the world, man. I mean, besides Nashville, I mean, they're mm-hmm. competing, right? Mm-hmm. But so I'm walking out of this coffee bar watching kind of coffee-style music. This lady actually... The daughter of Doyle Bramhall was singing with this lady, which was very cool. And then the brother of Will Sexton was playing. The brother of Charlie Sexton, who plays for Bob Dylan, was playing there. So that was cool already. I walk out, and there I walk into my guitar hero of guitar heroes. That's my new guy right now. My wife kind of calls him my boyfriend, but because I love him so much. But Gary Clark Jr. There he is standing there, and run into the guy. And I'm like, okay, I am not leaving without getting a picture of this guy. And then I'm going to ask him what fuzz pedals he uses, because this guy is a master of fuzz. He just uses fuzz like no other person. So, by the way, I've confirmed that he uses analog band and full tone fuzz pedals.
Oh, cool.
So, and I have to credit myself, jokingly, but he kind of offhandedly said to me, he was like, well, I'm kind of getting tired of the fuzz. I'm like, no, man, you can't get tired of the fuzz. You're the best person using fuzz out there in years. Just don't get rid of it. You're the only guy out there that's making it sound like it's supposed to sound. He's like, well, that's good to know. So I'm taking credit. So his next album, when he uses the fuzz pedal, the only reason he's using it is because of me. That's my credit I'm taking.
You saved the fuzz market.
I did. I saved his fuzz pedal. So, but I was super excited to run into him. That was, like, just crazy.
That's great. That is really cool. All right, without further ado, let's get on, because we got a lot to talk about tonight. Years ago, a friend of mine that he turned me on to this album. He said, check this out. You won't believe this, because he wanted me to play this song. And we actually, when I played in college, I actually learned this song. But the guitar playing on this it's the ultimate, I thought, was the Marshall sound, the Marshall Gibson marriage. It's really a nice, bright attack to it. It's just a beautiful sound. I'll let it speak for itself. Our guest tonight is the guy that played this and wrote this song, this intro. It's from the Lou Reed album, Rock and Roll Animal. It's called Intro to Sweet Jane. I'm going to play a clip for it, and we will get on with our guest. Here we go.
Thank you.
truly an honor to have Steve Hunter on the show. Steve, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here tonight.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Now, let's just get down to brass tacks here. You've told me before what you were using on here. Can you give everybody the layout of what you were using, which guitar, what amp you were using for that song?
Okay. What I had at the time was a 1959 Gibson Les Paul TV Special, that ugly Listerine yellow color, which I heard later, that color worked really well on black and white television.
Oh, that's cool. And
That's why the color. I always wondered why that color, you know, but that's what I found out later. It was Les Paul's idea. He used that guitar a lot on his Les Paul and Mary Ford show. The amp I was using, the amp we were both using, Dick and I both used, was a high watt. I don't know if it was a 50 or 100 watt. I don't remember that, but it was a four input high watt. And in those days, high watt was a fairly new amp that we had seen the Who use them.
Mm-hmm.
All I remember is we were at rehearsal one day and this guy in a suit comes in and says, "Would you guys like to try our amps?" And we said, "Sure, you know, we'll give them a try." And he brought in these high watts and we plugged them in and they sounded great. They sounded like between a Marshall and a Fender,
mm-hmm.
which was cool. They had a really special kind of unique tone. So we ended up taking those on the European tour as well as the American tour. And that's what I used on the recording, the live recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that sound is just great. It's interesting because I think the Who was another group that really they were started out on Marshall and then they eventually went to high watt, because when I saw them play, they were using high watt. And it didn't get the sound that you got. That's just a killer sound.
Well, I think it had to do with that P90. You know, it's an old guitar. It's 1959, and when I bought it, I mean, you're never going to believe how much I paid. I paid $250 for that guitar because
wow.
In those days, there was no such thing as vintage guitar. It was a used guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it really cheap, you know, and that P90 was kind of old. And I think there was just something about that. It was also the only pickup on the guitar. It was in the bridge position. And for some reason or other, it just loved that high watt. It also loved Marshalls, but there was a certain thing that happened in the high watt.
It was magic. That sound is magic. Now, I did get to see you in concert when you were touring with Alice Cooper on Welcome to My Nightmare. And I posted, just to let you know, if you go to our Facebook page, I found a picture of Steve with that Les Paul TV. It took me a little while to find it. But I also found another picture of him when he was touring with Alice. I noticed you were using BC Rich. Mm-hmm. Now, let me play a little clip. This is from the actual album, Welcome to My Nightmare. Again, a classic sound, and we'll get into what you were using on this one. But here's Cold Ethel. And you pretty much got that sound live. What did you use for the session for that song?
Oh, you know what? You're going to hate me for this, but that solo was Dick Wagner.
Oh, that was?
Yeah.
Did he do the solo at the beginning?
No, that was me.
Hold on. I got that one. Here, hold on a second. Here is Steve. There we go. That's
me.
Now, let me ask you, what did you use? And actually, since we did play Dick's lead on there, what did he use? Do you remember?
No, I didn't even think I was in the room when he played that solo. I think he played that solo later on when we were doing overdubs.
Oh, okay. But what were you using on that intro?
On the intro? Now, this, I had to think about this because, you remember, it's about 40 years ago, so...
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little dense exactly what was used where. You know, it's kind of like when it's almost like a guitar is a tool. So when you're done with the work, you put your tools away and you don't think about, well, what tool did I use?
Yeah.
But on that particular song, I do remember it was I had an SG. I had a 1964 SG with PAFs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And on that whole introduction thing, I remember distinctly using that guitar with the neck pickup through a Marshall.
Okay. And that was 100 watt or 50 watt? Do you remember?
I believe that was 100 watt, yeah.
Hey, Steve, this is Scott. Out of curiosity, when you are getting your distortion sounds in these albums or these songs that we're playing, did you prefer to get it through the amp, or did you use a pedal to help enhance it?
Well, to be honest with you, I never heard any pedals in those days that I really liked. So I preferred to use the amp. Just crank the amp. That was the best way to get the sound right.
Do you have any idea what speakers you were using?
Back in those days, I believe they were the original Greenback Celestians, the 25 watters. Now, you can't quote me on that, but I just remember they were whatever they were stock. We didn't see back in those days, you never really tricked anything up much. That started happening right around in there, like Seymour Duncan and Larry DiMarzio, to my recollection, started wrapping pickups and making them hotter, and there were pedals. Jimi Hendrix helped develop a lot of pedals, like the Fuzz Face and the Dallas Arbiter stuff. But for me, I just like sticking the guitar in one chord into the guitar, turn it up, and crank it, and that's how you got the sound.
Mm-hmm.
That just meant that I don't know why, but it always just sounded more natural, you know.
Well, no, there's something to be said about pushing the tubes.
I think so. Sound. Yeah.
So Steve, I have a question for you because one, I think it's pretty cool. When I was looking up your bio. But you're from Decatur, Illinois, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
That's where I'm from, actually.
You're kidding.
I lived there for 21 years. So I actually lived in Mount Zion, but I was born in Decatur at St. Mary's.
Okay. All right. I know where Mount Zion is.
But you went into the Army after you were in Decatur, Illinois, because obviously in Decatur, Illinois, you're not going to get discovered. We know it's just cornfields and ADM. So
and Staley's. Don't forget Staley's.
Well, yes, right. It's the soybean capital of the world. That's what we got.
That's right. That's right. And you know, we also had the only high flyer kite factory in the whole world for the longest time.
Really? I didn't know that, actually.
Yes, sir. That's how we made our floats for the prom and stuff, is we got all the remnants of the kite paper.
Very cool.
Now, that's a very important thing. I think you need to tell your listeners that. Decatur was the only high flyer kite factory.
Absolutely.
I remember. Well,
so you got drafted in the Army. How did you get from the Army to, you know, becoming an actual touring and playing musician? I mean, how did that occur?
You know, that was really a wonderful thing. I mean, I know it's weird to say that because when I got drafted, I was sort of like everybody else. I wasn't too keen on the Vietnam War We didn't understand what was going on over there, and my father was in the Army during World War II, and he just said, "Look, man, you know they're going to have your body, but don't give them your mind. Just go in there and do what you're told. Do your 2 years and get the hell out." But as it turned out, because of my eyesight, which was even poor back then, I didn't go to combat. I didn't have to see any combat. I ended up being an X-ray technician in an airback hospital in Okinawa for the remainder of my time in the Army, which was great because at the time I was thinking of being a doctor. But there was an Army talent contest that happened while I was doing a tour of duty in Okinawa. And I decided to go for it and put together a little trio, and we just did blues. We just did a blues tune. And all I remember is the night that I got on stage to do that, there were a whole bunch of black guys in the front row that were wounded Vietnam wounded guys. There were a lot of them. The whole first few rows, they got to come see the show for free because they were patients at the hospital, and they were booing me and everything. You know, before I started, oh yeah, well, this white guy's gonna play the blues, you know, and all that stuff. And it's really funny because I had a black drummer and a black bass player. And it was really weird because they really were kind of down on me. But by the time it was over, they were applauding me and cheering. And that went right to my soul. I mean, it was the most extraordinary experience I had ever had in my life. When I walked off stage, I knew that moment I wanted to be a guitar player, a musician for the rest of my life. My whole life changed because of those guys.
That's amazing. Yeah. Music is the universal language. I mean, it really
is. You know, and it was wonderful because I think they wanted to give me a chance. It's just that they thought I had a lot of nerve, you know, trying to be a white guy playing black music. But I so deeply love the blues that it was hard for me to really try to do anything else. You know what I mean? I just loved it so much. It was part of my soul, and I loved the feeling and the emotion of it. So I had to do a blues tune. And for those guys to give me such a break like that, and to feel that applause, and it just changed my whole life.
Any idea what the tune was? Do you remember?
No, it was just a 12 bar.
Just rocked it out basically on the.
Yeah, I just did a 12 bar blues, kind of a. I remember, I think I called it Screen Door or something. I had to give him some sort of name, and I just made something up. I don't know. And it was really silly, but God, it was a life changing experience for me.
Do you remember what you were playing?
Yeah, I had. Of course, I was in Okinawa, so I bought a guitar there. It was like a 335 copy. And the amp I used was sort of like a copy of a Fender Dual Showman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It actually sounded pretty good. It was temperamental. Sometimes you'd plug it in and turn it on, it wouldn't work. And just like any other amp, you kind of bang around on it a while and it starts working, you know. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, I had fun. I played a lot on the island. We had a little psychedelic band. We did like Jefferson Airplane and psychedelic music and stuff. And so I did get to play quite a bit while I was in Okinawa.
Wow, very cool.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
And you played pedal steel, too?
Well, okay, I can't say I'm a pedal steel player. I'm more of a lap steel player. I learned lap steel in Decatur when I was about 8 years old. My dad, it's a long story. I'll try to cut it down for you. But in grade school, there were a bunch of what we called suit people came around one day, and they were doing all these tests and aptitude tests and all this stuff on all of the little kids, you know. And apparently, I scored high in music and science. So they told my father, my parents, and they said, listen, you know, he might want to play an instrument. You know, he's only 8 years old, but he might want to play an instrument. You should ask him because he has an aptitude for music. So my dad asked me if I wanted to play an instrument. And I said, well, yeah, I would love to. And he said, what do you want to play? And I said, drums. And he said, no, it's got to have notes. And drummers love that story. It's got to have music. I think that's the way he put it. So I said, okay, guitar. That was my second choice. And I didn't know there was a difference between lap steel and regular guitar. I just, guitar is a guitar to me when I'm 8, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I ended up taking lap steel lessons, and I really enjoyed it. For about 5 years, I took lessons and really enjoyed it before I switched to regular guitar. But I dabble in pedal steel just ever so slightly, but boy, I sure wouldn't call myself a pedal steel player. I lived in Nashville for about a year and a half, and you don't call yourself a pedal steel player there. You know, you just don't.
Right.
There's too many good ones.
Unless you're Lloyd Green or someone like that.
Yeah, somebody like that. Yeah.
But I want to mention that on Steve's Facebook page, Steve Hunter, he posted a video of a song that he played guitar on for Julian Lennon. I think it's called Saltwater.
That's it, yeah.
And I had asked on the Facebook page what he was using, and it was a lap steel.
That's
and
right.
It's a beautiful, the tone on that thing is just amazing. Beautiful.
Oh, it was gorgeous. I don't have it anymore, but I have my father's old Supro.
Oh,
and
wow.
I used that on my new album, on Manhattan Blues Project. That's all over that album. That's an extraordinary sounding guitar, but the Fender was what I used on Saltwater.
Yeah, check it out on his Facebook page. It's a beautiful song, and it's Julian's great. And it's
he's a brilliant composer and singer, and he's a sweetheart. I love him to death.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, getting back to real quick with Alice Cooper, before we get in, again, I want to get back into the Manhattan Blues Project. Did you use what did you think of the BC Rich? I know you used it live. Did you use it for session work, or do you still have it? Or
Oh yeah, I do. I used it all the time. In fact, I had several for a while. I think I had about four of them. I had a double neck for a while. There's pictures of me playing the mm-hmm. double neck. I don't have any of them anymore because I kind of graduated into the Strat, sort of the Strat school for a while.
Okay.
But they were great guitars. I wish I still had my BC Rich Bitch, especially the double neck. That was an amazing guitar. It weighed 100 pounds, but it sounded amazing. It mm-hmm. was a beautiful guitar. I use them a lot on set. I don't think I use them on the Nightmare session. I don't think we had them yet.
Mm-hmm.
We got them about halfway, I think, halfway through the Nightmare tour. It was one of the first BC Riches made for anybody. I went out to Bernie's. Bernardo Rico was the guy who designed it, the first BC Rich guitars. And I went out to his place. It was like a garage with two guys, you know.
Yeah.
But boy, they were great guitars. They just played the feel and everything. It was really wonderful. I loved my BC Riches.
I remember the Seagull was their first guitar,
right.
And that's the one I saw you play on the tour. Using Marshalls for that, or were you using Hi-Watt?
No, we were using Marshalls for that.
You were using Marshalls.
Yeah.
Now you still play with Alice Cooper. What's changed? What are you using now for when you play with Alice Cooper now?
Well, now, the interesting thing is, when I played with him in 2011, I actually used a Wizard amp, which is a boutique amp from Canada. A guy named Rick St. Pierre, I think is his name. It's a very cool amp. I actually ended up borrowing one from Damon, the other guitar player at the time, mm-hmm. because I didn't have any really big, powerful amp. I had reduced my amp situation down to kind of smallish amps. So I didn't have anything, and I hadn't bought anything. I wasn't sure what I was going to end up using. But as the tour progressed, I think I ended up using a Wizard about half the time, and then a new Marshall the other half the time, and they were both 50 watts.
Mm-hmm. And which guitar did you use?
Right now, I'm an endorsee with Gretsch Guitars, and they had built me three custom shop guitars, which are sort of loosely on the dual jet, except they're solid body.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved them. I got Seymour Duncan pickups in them. We kind of messed around with the design a little bit. We're still kind of playing with the design a little, but they sounded and played great. So that's what I ended up using on most of the tour. When I first started the tour, the beginning of the tour, I was using an SG because the Gretches weren't finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they were done, I started using them.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that guitar. Is that going to be your signature model? Is that coming up?
You know, I don't know. You know, maybe if you put the word out there, maybe it will be. But I don't know for sure yet. I kind of hope so. But we're still, like I say, we're still kind of playing with the design a bit and mm-hmm. and things like that. But I don't know what's going to happen with it. But they're great guitars.
Oh, that's great.
What made you switch to Gretsch?
Well, I have a friend in the Gretsch camp. He's a very dear friend of mine, and we had worked together on other projects. I worked with him on the Squire project when he took over the Squire line, was trying to get it back up to par, you know, because it had gotten kind of shoved around a little bit, and so he took it over and kind of brought it back to life and started building really beautiful guitars. He got moved over to Gretsch when Fender decided to distribute Gretsch guitars. I think that's what the deal is. I'm not quite sure what the deal is, but I think they're just distributing Gretsch guitars. And I talked to him about, I was interested in Gretsch. I always kind of liked White Falcons and Country Gentlemen and stuff. I'm a huge Chet Atkins fan, so, and George Harrison fan. So mm-hmm. that was their guitar. And I was kind of trying to look for a guitar that was different than everybody else used. In other words, like, every big rock and roll band uses Les Pauls. Well, it's understandable. The Les Paul is the defining guitar of rock and roll. That's true. But I wanted to use something a little different. So when we started talking, the idea of using a Gretsch solid body sounded amazing to me. And that's really how I got involved in it.
Do you have the Sparkle Top?
No, I don't. I kind of wish I did, though.
They're
pretty cool, you know.
They are. I mean, whether it's the gold or the silver, man, every time I see it, I just – every time I'm in NAMM, I just want to figure out a way I can put it in my pocket and walk out. But
I hear you.
It's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Also, I get one just to hang on my wall, you know.
just to mention to everybody out there, Scott posted a link for a video of Steve playing the White Falcon with the
– It's actually the semi-hollow where they actually put a – piece of a wood block down the middle.
How did
you like that?
It surprised me. I'll be honest with you. It surprised me. I wasn't sure I was going to like it because I'm not sure how that solid block down the middle works and everything, but boy, I plugged it in and played it. I was really amazed at some of the sounds you could get out of it. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, did you use that guitar on your new album?
No, no. I used a huge variety of guitars, really. You know, I have Tellys, I have Strats, and I have, of course, different variety of Gretsch, and I do have a Les Paul and an SG. So they all kind of found their way on the album. You know, one way or the other, I found a way to use them. I like to, when I layer guitars, I like to use different guitars because then you get this wonderful blend in the harmonics because each guitar has its own character, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I like to use a variety of guitars when I'm layering stuff so that you get this really nice, rich sound.
Well, let's jump right into there. First of all, I want to let everybody know, the name of his new album is The Manhattan Blues Project, and the website for that is www.themanhattanbluesproject.com. I'm going to play a clip from the song Salisbury Hill that Peter Gabriel did, and I think you played on the original version of that.
Yes.
And I'm just going to play it, and then we'll start talking what you used on it. Here we go. Salisbury
okay.
Hill. Some we're counting how many guitars we can hear. I think we got up to like 7 or 8 of them.
Yeah, there's a lot on there.
Your acoustic guitar sound to die for. That's just the guitar layering of that is just beautiful. What were you using there? Let's just go through your guitars.
Okay, now I'll do my best to remember. Just bear with me.
Yeah, no problem.
I was working like you know how it is. I surround myself with guitars and just grab them and then I kind of forget. But I think I remember most of them on this. The acoustic guitar is Taylor. It's a Taylor.
Oh, okay.
It's an old Taylor, though. It's like I think the model was a 410, which I don't think they make anymore. And I had all kinds of problems with that guitar. The top split once, and the neck got funky, but I sent them back to Taylor. I have a friend that works there, and he saw, too, that they got repaired properly, that it got prepared properly, and now that guitar sounds better than it ever has. So... it's a beautiful sounding guitar. I use it on my Hymns for Guitar album. That's all Taylor,
mm-hmm.
pretty much.
Now, that was a 6-string or 12-string?
Well, there's a 6-string. There's a 12-string that comes in towards the end of that first verse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an old 64 Guild 12-string.
Okay.
Which sounds fabulous. It's an amazing guitar.
Can't go wrong there with a Guild 12-string.
Yeah, I think it was like the first year they made it, too. I'm not sure.
But yeah, it was in the early 60s that they did
early
it.
Early 60s, yeah. 62, 64, don't remember.
Yeah. Beautiful sound. Now, what about the electric guitars?
All right, now the electric, the main guitar, the melody guitar, that for sure is my Jeff Beck Strat, Jeff Beck Signature Strat, which is an amazing guitar. I mean, it's all I can say. It's an awesome guitar, wonderful tone. You can get so many different variety of tones out of it. That's one of the reasons why I like it so much. And I use it a lot. I used it quite a bit on the album.
Mm-hmm. What amp did you use for that?
Well, you're going to hate me for this because that's not an amp. That's a plug-in.
Oh, that's cool. No, no, no.
Some people get really mad at you.
No. Because I remember we had on earlier J.P. Duran from Incendio. And he was playing a blues album that he did, and he was using all virtual, and it faked me out. And that faked me out. I thought that was an amp.
Yeah, well, they've gotten them so that they're lots better now than they used to be. When they first came out, they sounded like crap, you know. Mm-hmm. But they've worked on them so much that now they're getting to the point. And you know what? It really is the most convenient. When you live in an apartment or something, you just can't crank an amp up. You know, you can't do it. And so I think it's the wave of the future because you have so much more control over what's going on rather than trying all the parameters that go with miking an amp properly mm-hmm. and everything.
Mm-hmm.
A good plugin is just a godsend. You just go through presets until you find something you like. Now, I usually tweak all the presets, though. I usually don't use stock ones. I usually tweak them a little to get them to sound kind of a little more. That one's been tweaked a little.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the original Salisbury Hill, which right. guitar did you use, the acoustic guitars, what did you use?
That was... there was a guy there, a second engineer by the name of Jim Frank,
mm-hmm.
A wonderful guy. He's left us, unfortunately, but he had this wonderful Martin. And at the time, I didn't like Martins too much at the time. They always seemed hard to play to me. But his Martin was really nice. It was very gentle playing, and it sounded great. You stick a mic on it anywhere in the room, and it sounded great. So that's the guitar I used on the acoustic mm-hmm. parts of the Salisbury Hill.
That's another great sound. But I have to admit, this recording on your new album, the acoustic guitar is just beautiful.
Well, now, thank you.
Do you know what mic you used?
Yes. What's it called? Mic Tech, right?
Yeah.
It's a company called Mic Tech. It's a fairly new company. That's their mic called the C4. And it's a tube mic. It's a tube condenser. Great big diaphragm. Has an enormous amount of patterns and stuff. It's the most beautiful sounding mic. It's one of the more natural sounding mics. Like it sounds as good on vocals as it does on acoustic guitars. In other words, what you hear coming out of the mic is exactly what you hear coming out of somebody's mouth or out of the guitar. It's very, very true.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very organic sounding, really warm. So I use it a lot. I use it on a lot of things.
Did you any particular preamp, or did you just plug directly into the computer?
I believe I plugged that. Oh no! I'm sorry. I take that back. I have a little preamp I call Uncle George, and Uncle George is an old '60s Ampex tape preamp that has a mic input, and I had it modified so I can come out of it and go straight into Pro Tools. It's all tubes from the '60s. It's got a great big VU meter on the front and everything. I call it Uncle George because George Martin, who is my ultimate favorite producer, almost always used tube stuff. That's all he used for many years. And I was so lucky to find this on eBay. I had to get it fixed a little bit. There were some couple of things with it, but it's the most beautiful. Again, it's another really warm. It warms up stuff that goes into Pro Tools.
Wow. Very cool. Hey, I just want to remind everyone we're talking with Steve Hunter, and if you want to call and ask Steve a question, make sure to dial 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And Jeff, do you have a clip of the first song, the intro to Blues, by Curious? Or, what the heck am I talking? I'm curious. By Curiosity.
Opening clip for what?
It's called Intro to Blues.
I have I pulled the clip of 222. I didn't pull that clip.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I just want to ask you, on that one, it's very heavily influenced with a lot of delay. I'm curious what delay you used on that one.
Let me think. I think that was also a preset.
So it's a Pro Tools plugin?
It's a plugin. Well, it's not Pro Tools. It's a company called Overloud. It's a guitar thing called TH2. It's a guitar plugin, and it's made in Italy. The software is designed in Italy, and it's set up sort of like the way you would actually see. I mean, it's all stomp boxes and stuff. It looks like, but it also has amp modeling and all that stuff, and you can move the mics around and all that, you know. But I believe that was the delay that was built into the plugin that I just tweaked. I tweaked it a little bit.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I mean, it was just beautifully done. How you could just kind of just keeps on fading, you know, out. And I just really like the delay on that opening song.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things I did when I mixed this album is I tried to mix it in such a way that if you put headphones on and listen to the album, it's a slightly different experience than when you listen in speakers. So what I did was on a lot of songs, I put this, what I call hidden delay, so that you didn't really hear it unless you put headphones on. And then suddenly you heard these little things kind of popping in and out in the background that you may not have been aware of on the speakers. So that your headphone experience is slightly different.
Yeah, that's actually exactly how I listened to it, was through headphones.
Okay, so. Good. Good. It worked then.
Now, I also had a question for you. So on this album, you collaborated with quite a few artists, you know, people like Joe Satriani, Joe Perry, even Johnny Depp. When you work with them, how did that work? Did they actually come to your studio? Did you send them files? How did that all process work?
Well, nowadays it's the wonderful thing is you can just send files. You don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to drive. You don't have to just send them files. Everybody has some way of recording now, pretty much. And so I think Johnny Depp has a friend that was in a band. He was in a band with that has a Pro Tools rig, and he just, you know, they just went and recorded the thing. Same with Joe Perry, and they all just kind of had their own little way of recording stuff. So I just sent the files out. I think the only guy that had to go in the studio actually was Marty Friedman, because he doesn't have a studio set up. He has like just a small thing for writing and stuff. So he had to go in the studio, but just about everybody else had their own way of recording. Mm-hmm. So I just sent files out.
Did you pretty much, when you mix them, is that pretty much what they gave you, or did you have to process?
No, pretty much what they gave me. The only thing I did was sometimes I'd add a little tiny bit of EQ just so that it would sit in the track right, rather than have to write a volume or try to kick the volume up. Mm-hmm. I didn't compress anything. I didn't have to do any of that sort of thing. Most of it was just EQ. I added a little bit of delay on Joe Satriani's solo at the end because I wanted it to kind of have a real singy, zippy sort of thing when he does that high note. Mm-hmm. But other than that, that's what I got. That's what I got from everybody.
Now, how did you instruct them? Did you kind of produce it in the sense of, you know, you tell them, here's what I'm looking for, or did you just let them just do their thing?
Well, I don't know if I could do that with Johnny Depp. I could say, okay, now, Johnny, here's what I want from you, buddy. Come on. No, you know what I did, actually? I sort of told everybody, play what you feel. In other words, I mean, everybody, whoever I sent it to, Joe Satriani, anybody I sent it to, with Johnny and Joe Perry, I told them, look, this song, Brooklyn Shuffle, it's a fun song. It's like a cruising around in a car kind of song. So what I want you guys to do is just plug in and have fun. I want you to have fun with it. Don't think about it too much. Just play. You know how to play 12-bar blues, so just have a ball. And that's pretty much what I did. All I did with Joe Satriani and Marty Friedman and Michael E. Ferkin and those guys, I just sent them the tapes and said, do you want to play on it? And they all said yes. And I said, well, you know, play whatever you want. And they sent it back to me. I said, whatever you play, that goes on my record. And left it to them.
Yeah, when I heard the Satriani song, almost the first two notes into it, I'm like, this is Satch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just got that sound.
Yeah, you know, you can't really tell Joe, you know, what to play. You just, what you do with a guy like Joe Satriani, you just say, Joe, whatever you feel, whatever falls in place for you, that's what you should play. There's no way I could direct those guys other than that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They know what to do.
All right, let me play a couple other clips from the album. This is, I'm going to play two clips from the song 222 West 23rd Street.
Right.
First is kind of the opening groove, and it kind of gives you another layer of guitars, and we'll talk about how you got that sound. Here we go.
Okay. Thank you.
There's the echo for...
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That delay right there.
Now, was that the Strat?
Yeah, that was the Jeff Beck Strat.
And all right, that's a plug-in?
And that's a plug-in, yeah. I tweaked it again, just so you'll know. I mean, I think anybody who uses a plug-in would probably tweak most of the presets, because the presets are really kind of designed to show off the plug-in, right? So sometimes they're a little overdone. So I had to pull back on a lot of stuff and tweak the EQ a little and things like that. But now, yeah, it's a plug-in.
Now, that guitar, in that plug-in, are you using compression to get that sustain, or is that the guitar?
The plug-in has compression in there, in the plug-in. So I did adjust that a little. And then sometimes what I do in mixing is I'll put a light touch compression on the overall mix of that guitar. In other words, all the guitar, the sound, and the effects, I would run those all through a light compression, just a light compression, just to keep things from going too crazy.
Because some of your crazy bends, they just go forever. I mean,
I know, that's wonderful.
It's great.
I love that.
Now, I'm going to play a little bit farther into the track, and this is one of your lead, your formal lead, so to speak.
Right.
Now, is that a plug-in, or is that...
No, that's an amp.
Yeah, okay.
And I believe, now I'm a little cloudy. It's either the Wizard or the Marshall.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I'm saying that is because I tried them both, and I don't remember which one I ended up landing on.
which Marshall do you use?
It's a brand new one. It's the new model. I don't remember the model number.
Okay.
The model of it, I just don't remember. It's a 50-watt, and it's got a lot of knobs on it. It's like a three-channel.
Okay.
But it sounded really good for this. I have a 2x12 cabinet that has Celestians in it, and I mic'd it. I think I used just a 57, and I think I just cranked the amp. I don't think I used any pedals. In fact, I'm pretty sure I didn't use a pedal in front of it.
Well, you used a wah pedal. What was the wah you used?
Yeah, I think that was a Crybaby.
Ah, it was a nice sound.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounded really good. I mean, it's not a particularly old one, but a medium. You know, I think it was from the 70s or early 80s, maybe. It's noisy as hell, but it sounds great. So, you know, I used it.
It's just a killer one. Let me play another one that has, again, a good example of the type of sustain that you're getting. This track is called Daydream by the Hudson. A little clip from that. Hold on a second. Let me play that.
Okay.
I presume that acoustic is the Taylor, right?
No, believe it or not, that's not the Taylor.
You're just surprising me. That's great.
Gretsch has a new line of guitars out there called Roots, I think, or Root Guitars, or Rootsy Guitars or something. That particular guitar is a Gretsch resonator guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's hard to describe because it doesn't have the heavy resonator sound of something like a dobro.
Yeah.
it has its own character, which I just love. And I threw a mic on it and played it, and I thought, man, this thing sounds gorgeous. I got to use it on this, you know, because I had it in the case. I hadn't really messed with it too much, and I pulled it out for this song just to try, see what it would sound like, and it just sounded amazing. I'm obviously be using it more.
Is that the resonator that you have, that you're pictured with on the cover of your album?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it is. That's it.
I was looking at that. I was trying to figure out if that was the Gretsch or not. It looked like it was because it had the text down the middle
yeah.
of the headstock, but I couldn't read it for sure. But.
No, that's it. That's the one. Yeah, they sort of make it look a bit retro, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're making like, you know, I have an amazing ukulele from them that's really loud, and it ukulele has a certain kind of nice rhythm sound in a track, you know. You never know. You don't know what it is, but it sounds good in the track, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I like to have a variety of instruments to pick from.
Have you checked out their the banjo ukulele?
No, I saw it at the NAMM show. I haven't had a chance to try it out yet. They also, I think they have a 6-string banjo too. Mm-hmm. Not sure, but I have a 5-string banjo, but I didn't get a chance to check it. I saw that on hanging on the wall at the NAMM show. I didn't try it out.
Yeah, I remember actually seeing you at the NAMM talking to Joe Carducci. Actually.
Joe Carducci's my buddy. Yeah.
Yep. So I was actually trying to get Joe's attention, and he was talking to you, and I had no idea it was you until later. So.
Yeah, that's my buddy Joe. That's the guy that he and I are. Well, I've been friends with him for many years, and we've been working together on different projects for many years. So,
now on Daydream of the Daydream by the Hudson, which was this last track,
right.
What were you using electric guitar wise?
Now electric guitar, that is a Les Paul, but it's a very special Les Paul. It's called the model is a Lou Paolo.
Oh.
And the Lou Paolo model was made, I don't remember exactly when it was made. The word is there was only 400 or so of them made. Lou Paolo was a friend of Les Paul's, and they used to play together a lot. He's a great jazz guitar player. And this particular guitar has a black top and then natural sides and back. And it has a P90 in the neck position, which is my favorite pickup. But in the bridge position, I don't know what's there. The original model had what they call the dirty fingers, the Gibson dirty fingers, mm-hmm. but I think it's been replaced. I don't know what it is.
I think the dirty fingers turned into what their PAF is now, I believe.
Might be, yeah. I don't know, but this is not an original Gibson pickup. I don't know if it's DiMarzio or Seymour Duncan. It's a replacement, but it sounds amazing. I bought the guitar from Tommy Hendrickson, who I was working with Alice in 2011. He's still playing with Alice. Tommy's a good friend of mine. And I bought it off him, and I just loved it. It's an amazing guitar.
Yeah, actually, Lou Paolo came out with an album called Thank You Less, which is really, mm-hmm. really cool.
I'd like to hear that.
Oh, you should check it out, because he kind of goes through a lot of the tunes that Les Paul played, and he has a lot of collaborations with different artists, but it's really fun to listen to. It's beautiful.
Well, I know he's supposed to be a great guitar player.
He's pretty good. I mean, I actually got to see him in New York City with Les, so...
Oh, wow, how cool is that? I wish I could have done that.
Yeah, he still plays that. I think he plays that black Les Paul every time I've ever seen him, so it's got to be that same one.
Yeah, it's the same one. They built it specifically for him, and, of course, it was Les's idea, I'm sure, you know, and just had him had it built however he wanted it.
But it's
an extraordinary guitar.
If it wasn't, Les will still take credit for it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Were you using a plug-in for that, or is that an amp?
That's a plug-in.
It's just it's just really, really just a great tone. Now, you were using the P90 on that?
No, on that one. On that particular track, I was using the bridge pickup.
Oh,
it just has this wonderful singing sound, you know. I can't describe it. It's just that when you plug it in, the guitar all of a sudden feels like it's going to sing right out of your hands. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And mm-hmm. you didn't back off the tone or anything like that? Because it just kind of had like that sound. Like it just.
No. No, I didn't touch it. I just ran it through the... And again, I tweaked the plug-in because, like I say, the plug-ins are always a little over the top. And I tweaked the plug-in just a bit to get the sound, just to give it a little more oomph. A lot of times what I end up finding myself doing is adding a little bit of a bass or low end and a little bit of middle to most of these plug-ins. They're usually mm-hmm. a little too bright. Mm-hmm. And then when I mix... I usually, like I said, put a little compression on it, but I also EQ some of the high end stuff off because that's what makes it sound digital. So I take that stuff off. And also, when I'm playing in my in a plugin, I'm not going straight into Pro Tools. I'm going into a direct box, which then goes into Uncle George, my tube preamp, and then into Pro Tools. And I think that makes a huge difference in the way the sound quality going into the plugin. Mm-hmm. Now, that took a lot of experimentation before I really came to that and found that to be to work. But that's all I do now.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great.
Yeah, it makes a difference, yeah.
I'm going to play one more clip before I have a clip for us to take us out, but because we're almost at the end of the show. This is Flames of the Dakota, and right. There's a lot of guitars on here. Let's play this real quick and get a real quick rundown of what you did on this.
Okay.
That sounds like you're using a lot of lap steel on there, correct?
It's a combination of two things. At the very beginning of the song, that's a slide part. But on the part you just played, that is my dad's lap steel. It's an old 52 Supro.
It just sounds great.
Oh, it just sounds... Oh, it's the sweetest sounding lap steel I've ever heard. It's mother of toilet seat purple. You know, it's just awesome.
And then the other guitars, what were you using? There's a bunch of electrics in there.
Well, there's not as many in there as you might think. There are three acoustics that play all the way through. There's a couple of electrics. I was trying to think. I think one of the electrics is my Tele. I just have a regular American Tele. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a Bill Nash Strat that he built for me as a gift, which is a wonderful thing. I use that a lot, too. It has a Strat sound, but with a little extra. So I use that. I actually use that quite a bit on the album. The main lead guitar is the Les Paul, and that's on the P90.
The Lou Paolo.
Yeah.
No, that's beautiful stuff. Great layering. And I presume all of that's plugins?
The guitars in the background, that's through an amp. Those are amps. See, it's kind of weird because a lot of times the plugins don't get the kind of sound that you would like to have when you're doing layering. Now, I can't explain what that is yet exactly. Sometimes you can pull it off and sometimes you can't. But something happens in the harmonic content. When I run the guitars through amps, the harmonic content sounds rich. Sometimes in the digital domain, it gets a little bit screwy, and and you can't fix it with EQ or compression or anything. It's just that's one of the little bugs in the plugins. They haven't quite worked out yet. Some of it has to do with just moving air, you know. So most of those guitars, those rhythm guitars in the background, I think I went through an amp.
Okay, I mean, because it does fit. Everything's in the pocket. I can hear all the different parts, and it's clear. It's not stepping on another part or anything. It's just
mix. It's a tough thing to do, but I mean I've been doing layering guitars for most of my life. I mean, I started out doing that with Bob Ezrin. I learned a lot of that from Bob Ezrin, how guitars get layered and how they work together as layered. And then I've done a lot of experimenting on my own because I love what happens in the harmonics. The harmonic content gets richer, enriched somehow. Mm-hmm. When you layer guitars properly, and it's a lot of experimentation, a lot of trial and error until you find it sitting. Like for instance, two acoustic guitars. If you have one in regular tuning and one in dadgad, the harmonics that happen is so rich and lovely that and I don't know, somebody can tell me scientifically what's going on, but just to my ears, it's the most beautiful sound. Mm-hmm. It's more beautiful sounding and more rich sounding than just doubling a guitar in regular tuning.
Wow.
I don't know why, but I love it.
It's just like people using the Nashville tuning where they have the octave.
Yeah, I use that a lot too. I have a guitar set up just in Nashville tuning. I use it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Well, we're already out of time. I still have many more questions, but it just means that you're going to have to come back and talk more guitar with us.
I would be happy to do that.
Well, we thank you so much for being on, and I just want to say a special thanks to your lovely wife, Karen.
Yeah.
Who really helped out. We, you know, working with the Skype and everything, it's just a wonderful job. It sounds really great over here.
Good.
I want to mention real quick, www.stevehunter.com is his main website. There's also the site for the album, www.themanhattanbluesproject.com. And please check out his Facebook page, Steve Hunter. There's some amazing stuff that they're posting up there, and there's a lot of interesting. You'll hear some more cuts of the album, some other live cuts and videos, YouTube stuff, like that Julian Lennon thing, the Saltwater. Check it out. It's really some of the most beautiful guitar work I've ever heard. But thank you so much. We will have you definitely on again. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I just want to let everyone know our next week's guest is Dan Boole from 65 Amps.
Yes.
So he'll actually be in studio, and he'll bring a couple of amps with him, and he's a heck of a player himself, besides a great amp maker.
Yes. Now, to take us out, I'm going to play a good chunk of a clip from Central Park, which is another song on the album, The Manhattan Blues Project. Thank you so much, Steve, for being on, and everybody, thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you next week. Have a great week. And here's Central Park.